Hello, and a really warm welcome to our podcast, Successful Student Transitions, A Time to Thrive, hosted by Louise Miles and me, Elizabeth Gillis. In our podcast, we aim to be a companion for young people as they step out of school and into the world of work and study and help them thrive in new environments. We've had a focus recently on the first year of university with students and learning and hearing about what's it like for them to be in that first term. And if that interests you, go back and have a listen to their stories and the things they learnt about the transition to university. And we want to acknowledge that for some students, this move to university might be a challenge. So we've been talking with several people who've got an autism diagnosis and their university experience. Today, we're talking with Ananya. Welcome, Ananya. You have your university experience behind you and you're working now in your chosen career, which is fantastic. And we thought it'd be helpful if you would share your knowledge and wisdom with us. So welcome, Ananya. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
Would you like to talk a little bit about your diagnosis to start with and when it happened? And we know from previous people, they had their diagnosis at university or at the very end of university. When was your diagnosis?
So I started seeing CAMHS. I think that stands for Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. Yep. From the NHS. After being referred there from my school whilst I was in year 8 going into year 9, mm-hmm. I'd had a lot of anxiety. I was having trouble sort of fitting in, focusing in lessons, and it became almost too stressful for me to sort of enjoy the mainstream sort of educational setting. So I ended up being referred. I had a few sessions. Saw a few different psychologists, and then they asked whether I thought it would be a good idea to be evaluated for autism. I guess at the time I didn't really think about any of it, really. It wasn't even on my mind. I'd had a friend at school who had just been diagnosed with ADHD, so I thought just because they were around me, I was a bit like, there's a slight crossover. Maybe that's what I'll get as well, but it was autism that they were investigating. And across, I mean, the wait times are long. So it took, I want to say, 2 to 3 years until I ended up being assessed and then getting the full diagnosis just after my GCSEs.
Right. So the diagnosis came when you were kind of towards the end of your secondary school?
Yes, it was before my A-levels. Mm-hmm. So I had all the, I don't know what they're called, like where you get extra time.
Yeah. And call them kind of accommodations or adjustments and stuff.
Yeah. So those were added on to my A-levels and my ASs, but I didn't get them for GCSEs. And they did make a big difference.
Did they?
Anna? Yeah.
In what way?
I felt like I had time to process the questions mm-hmm. that were being asked. I find the word questions I don't know what part of information to pick out of it when it's sort of a written instruction. Same with along those lines, I think it was helpful that the teachers knew, because when we had to be given instruction in class, they could then tailor it. Mm-hmm. Whereas at GCSE level, any instructions for revision or information in the class, it was sort of handed to me as if I had no problem processing the information.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I think it made me sort of thrive in that. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed my A-levels massively, much more than GCSE. There's also, I only really enjoyed the sciences. And right. Once I got to A-level, I could drop all my other subjects.
So it sounded like that extra time that you were given mm-hmm. during exams, and also teachers understanding kind of maybe your learning profile mm-hmm. like that. Those were two things that came from the diagnosis that were really helpful.
Definitely.
Was there anything else that was helpful in this diagnosis?
I think the diagnosis sort of gives you easy access to all the services, all the support. I think specifically before 18, services are great. There's a slight problem, I'd say, in those services not carrying on past 18. But it was good to get the sort of the talking therapies, the CBT, sort of the occupational therapies, understanding social interactions, practicing facial expressions, all of that. I also had sort of, well, I had anxiety and OCD diagnosed alongside the autism. So it was good to be able to sort of address those whilst also getting the support at school, because I think a lot of the mental health side of the autism, yeah, made it harder for me to focus in class as well.
Yeah. So it sounded like you had a nice kind of package of care then.
Yeah.
I like you said that you thrived in your A-levels.
Yeah.
That's what we don't want people just to be coping. We want them to be doing really well. So the fact that you chose that word is, you know, lifts my heart. So then if we think about knowing you had this diagnosis and knowing that there were things that were helpful to you, and knowing as well that, you know, sometimes that transfer, like when you're 18 or making transitions after 18 or leaving school where you know things really well and then going off into university, were there some things that this diagnosis helped you with going into university? Were there services there for you? You know, I know this was maybe a couple of years ago. Were there services there?
Yeah, there was the, I can't remember the name, but I assume just disability services support. Yeah.
And it's still called, I hate those words, but it's called the disability service that all universities will have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was advised by my head of year to make sure that I sort of register myself once I'd chosen my university. And I would say that that's a really good thing to do, because it meant that over that long summer after you've done your exams, you filled out the forms to get the support. So once you arrive, you have your first meeting with your support worker that they've assigned to you. And you can already sort of, before classes begin, get to know them, figure out when you're going to meet them regularly.
Yeah,
and they sort of help you fill out forms for the disabled students allowance if you need sort of printer credits or if you need text-to-speech software, recording devices for lectures. I would say that sort of the transition of the sort of files into from one school to the next sort of university, that was all really good, quite seamless. And that's where I'd say the diagnosis really helped, because just knowing that I would need that extra help and making sure it was already in place sort of eased me. I also just don't like telling like my lecturers that I need this or that. I'm not great at advocating for myself, I guess. I find it awkward, one, just to that interaction, and then to specifically ask for something to be done. So I'd much rather it go through a service where it's kind of all regulated by the university and they just say like she needs X, Y, and Z, and then it gets done.
And did it get done?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it was actually really good. I got printers, like a printer in my room so that I could print all my lecture notes. I got text to speech. So because I've got issues reading, it gives me a migraine, and the sort of contrast exacerbates sort of vertigo. So I got text to speech software. I also got extensions on my coursework and extra time in my exams.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of weekly support sessions, mentoring, and a recording device for lectures.
I mean, isn't that is just...
Oh, it was really good. It was really good.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that other people have said is look at when you're applying to university, if you've got any kind of concerns or challenges, see what the university can provide for you, because maybe some universities can really go the extra mile and some maybe less so, but it sounded like the university you went to was really kind of geared up for this particular support.
Yeah, and I'd say you can even in the summer or sort of the months leading up to your final year at secondary school, you can email the disability service and you can ask for a tour with them and they can take you through the university and sort of point out where they're located, what they can offer. At my particular university, they did that. And then once you got accepted, and right shortly before we started, I think we started in October and this was in September, they invited a whole group of us with the same diagnosis to tour the campus once again. So we sort of were made familiar to it again, and we got to meet sort of people that were similar to us.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know.
That's great. And Edward, who's a research fellow that we interviewed last time, he was saying that that's what they do at their university. They do these additional transition days, and also they have kind of an enhanced induction program. So it sounded like, Ananya, that all worked well for you.
Yeah.
And I asked, I think for me, that sounds like they're supporting learning in a very good way.
Yeah.
What about the social side of it or that? Because students just don't go to learn. They go to be independent and learn to do their washing and cooking and meeting, you know. Was there any other support for those other things?
Not really. And I think that's where it's one of those cases, it's a classic case of you read it on paper and it sounds amazing and like the student would do fine and there would be no problems. But I actually hated my university experience.
Did you?
It wasn't fun. I'm glad I have the degree.
Mm-hmm.
But if I think back to those 3 years, they were mildly traumatic. I think the first year was particularly rough. I think that just leaving everything from my hometown to go to sort of a big city,
mm-hmm.
and none of my classmates went to my chosen university. I was the only one in the year that went to this one. So I knew other groups of people that were going off to the same university. I didn't have many friends at my secondary school. And we were doing different subjects. So it never would have happened. But I remember being quite envious that some groups were going off to the same university together. I also, in the first, I think, 3 to 6 months, I'd still not made any friends.
Mm. So
I was just alone all the time. And then I think universities, especially at the very start of your course, you see all these friendships sort of blossoming in front of you. And I feel like almost seeing it and not having it made it worse. And then I felt very inadequate with myself because I was like, why can't I do that? Why can't I have that classic university experience? Why do I just learn all day? I mean, my scores were great.
Yeah.
So all my tests were phenomenal, but I was missing out on that social side. I was isolated.
Mm.
I wasn't going to any of the university sort of societies or freshers events because I didn't know anyone to go with and I didn't want to go by myself.
Yeah.
So I feel like whilst one part of my university experience was going okay, which was sort of the learning side, the rest of it was sort of going rapidly downhill. And I think my mental health took a big hit. And I noticed my OCD would get much worse because I would have to leave for lectures almost an hour before they started because I would inevitably walk back home to check that everything was locked or turned off. And it was just that sort of that social anxiety was just presenting itself in sort of exacerbated symptoms.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds really, I think you're right. I mean, awful kind of just to see other people getting on with things and you feeling that you found that hard to do and feeling isolated.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, looking back now, was there any support that you could, maybe there wasn't any support that you could have keyed into because it was all learning support, or what do you think? Or maybe, I mean, if you could kind of like create a kind of organization to, or a system that would support people going into university, what would it look like for you then?
I think it's tricky. Never really thought of it. It's one of those things where I was always like, I want this to change, but then never had a good sort of idea of what that change would look like.
I mean, it sounds to me that if a university is just focused on the learning thing, I mean, often people go to university for the social side, yeah, of it, don't mm-hmm. they? Or a bit of both, you know?
Yeah.
That universities have to know to support academically, but know how to support socially and emotionally.
Yeah. I think it would probably have been useful if, whilst I was having my sort of support sessions, mm-hmm. they kind of would make me aware of some of the events that were going to happen. Or maybe they have like a buddy system where someone would go with you.
Yeah.
That maybe volunteers.
Yeah.
Or if, I don't know, they know that someone else is interested in going, they would say, oh, I know someone who also wants to go.
Yeah.
I think that would have helped, because I think I was just alone and I had no in not be alone.
Yeah.
So that was, I think that was difficult.
Edward talked about at his university now, they have, and he said that this might sound like a kind of strange thing, but they have a kind of social communication group where, you know, they bring people together who've got a diagnosis about things and then they meet together. And I think often, I think you're absolutely right that sometimes those things have got to be set up and engineered, because if, you know, some people just find those things difficult to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that would have made it easier, because I did end up sort of doing things that involved people but weren't directly involving people. So I'd feel less alone. Like, I'd go to a lot of galleries and museums on very busy, busy dates, just because I wanted to feel like I was with people, but I didn't have anyone. So and I also didn't want to like make a conversation with someone randomly to go to the museum. So I just did lots of things that I wanted to do anyway that happened to be in public spaces. So it was less weird to do them alone. And I think that kind of helped a little. It wasn't great. I thought about it a lot, but yeah, it did help to sort of go be amongst people and not just sit in my room all the time.
And that's you being, kind of say, using your kind of your intelligence about what you need is you need to be with other people, and you're finding a different way to do it.
Yeah.
A way that likely met some of that need, but not all of it.
Yeah. And I think having the diagnosis beforehand helped, because I kind of knew this could happen if I, like, I'd been diagnosed for maybe 4 or 5 years at that point, or at least had an idea that diagnosis might happen for quite a while. So I was already aware of my habits and how that linked to the diagnosis. So I kind of knew ways to go about it.
Yeah. And maybe needed just a little bit of extra support to do that.
Yeah.
And when you were meeting your mentor, do you think they were mostly focused then on your academics? Did they ask you about other stuff as well? Or do you think?
It was focused on the academia part of it. They would ask about like late homework, what my timetable was looking like. They weren't really asking about any friendships that I was making or anyone that I knew.
So there was a missed opportunity there, wasn't there?
Yeah.
So to you as a whole person, not just an academic person.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That sounds tough. I mean, you did your 3 years.
Yeah.
I know some people that can easily drop out because they feel like that.
Yeah. I was supposed to do 4.
Yeah.
And I shortened it. I had wanted to... The third year I was there because I knew I only have 6 months and then I graduate.
Yeah.
But if it had been any longer, I think I would have left just in the middle of it, because it wouldn't have seemed worth it.
And the fact that you thought you thrived doing your A-levels.
Yeah.
And then the comparison to this kind of struggle at university. And it sounds it wasn't the academic struggle. It was about, you know, the social stuff that was going on that you would have liked.
Yeah. And then it did have a sort of a ricochet effect or a domino effect onto my academics.
Right.
Because I feel like the longer I was there and the more isolated I became, I kind of didn't really want to go in and study all the time. Is it, I almost was rebelling against what had become my entire reason for being there, because I wasn't making friends. I was only good at the academic stuff. And I was like, well, maybe if I, it had no logic whatsoever, but I was like, if I don't do the academic stuff, maybe I'll just make the friends.
Yes.
Which then just meant my performance in the actual university just took a massive hit. So
I can understand that.
Yeah.
I can understand also somebody saying, well, actually, if I'm not doing my academics, somebody might ask me what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it was, I just wanted some sort of acknowledgement. I didn't really know how to go about it.
Yeah. So a good kind of pointer there to university, don't just focus on the academics.
Yeah.
Okay. So as well as kind of like those obviously big challenges there in relation to the social stuff, were there times you could use your strengths at university?
I'm just trying to think.
You said your test scores were great and everything.
Yeah.
So actually, it sounded like the academics, like they were bored for you.
Yeah, I think the academic side was fine. I think because I am also someone, whilst I have just talked about how much I wanted this socialization, I can, for the most part, if it's like chosen, I'm fine by myself, like a lot of the time. I don't need constant input from other people. I think there's just certain moments where I'm a bit like, it would be great if someone else saw that I was alive, you know, just to have someone to share something with. But for the most part, I am content sort of to just get on with things. I like a to-do list. I like checking it off. And so I think that really helped during university. I sort of had my day planned and my rigid routine of the entire week. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of went through it. And so that sort of all flowed sort of like a machine almost. It was maybe a little unhuman, but yeah, I didn't really have to worry too much about that. The laundry was done, my flat was always clean. It was just sort of like part of the daily tasks, and I'm always quite good at that. I don't really tend to procrastinate, which I think helps, but I just don't really have the strengths of social skills or managing any of the sort of interpersonal relationships or anything. So
I mean, just to touch a couple of things you said there, mm-hmm. that procrastination is huge for kind of young people,
yeah,
especially when they go to university, mm-hmm. because they've got all this additional time that they don't have to do with. So the fact that you can create some structure and organization and plans and checklists, like, and keeping your flat clean and your laundry all done, all that kind of stuff, likely gave you a lot of certainty.
Yeah, that 100%. I think the only reason I was still at university for that long was because I was sort of, the other aspects of my life were still sort of doing okay. Yeah, I think the routine that I can create for myself is a massive positive in my life past university. Yeah. I feel like I have a lot more time in my day than other people.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't know. my mum is who I talk to a lot of the time, and she's always saying she needs more hours in the day. But I actually feel like I have sort of extra time. I have a lot going on. My mum looked over my CV the other day, and she said it feels like I'm doing too much for one person. But I just feel like that's just how I spend my day. I like to be very busy. I think maybe that comes as sort of a coping mechanism of being so lonely, is to just constantly be doing things. It does mean I have a lot of extra skills. Like, I've taught myself many languages, and I think that is very useful for university as well, and for jobs after. And I just sort of, I've speak to people at my work, because it's also very busy, very high paced, and they're all saying, oh, the minute exam season comes up, I don't have the time to study my own interests. And I'm like, oh, I've always made time for this. It just slots nicely in after my 6 to 7 p.m. dinner, and then right before my 8 p.m. shower, and so I have my hour there. And yeah, I don't know, it's just it's always there, and once it's written in the calendar, I don't move it. It's just I feel compelled to do it.
I think many people would love that skill. Maybe you need to teach it. But I think using being able to organize your time and sticking to it, and then having time to do some stuff that you want to develop in yourself, like learning languages. Yeah. That sounds fantastic. And likely other times to do other things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think you're right that some of those things, your strengths that you could use at university to get the academic stuff done, was likely a big strength of yours.
Yeah.
What do you think was the most helpful support at university then? Do you think it was that meeting the person or not? What do you think it was?
I think there were a few sort of academic influences, i.e. like the from the actual institution of the university, but then I found very helpful, and this is just very, I think it's personal depending on who the person is, but I have a very close relationship with my grandparents, and I called them like once a week, twice a week, and we just spoke for an unlimited amount of time, or unspecified, however long I needed. And it gave me people to talk to about the new things that were happening in my life that I couldn't share with like friends because I didn't have those. So it was good to sort of, and they weren't there in person, so it was sort of, it just felt a bit like I had two things going on rather than like just the lady at the support desk that was talking to me about my academics. Like they knew me well, they knew, yeah, I mean they're my grandparents, but it just helped being able to speak to someone a little bit more close and personal.
Yeah.
So I would say that actually helped me massively. And I spoke to them even into other transitions into my life. I mean, I just kept it in the calendar as sort of like my weekly sort of check-in with them. But I think it really helped because I could then also talk through certain social things. My grand blesser would also follow like Facebook pages of events that I said I might go to. So it kind of, she said she would look out in the photos that they would post if I was in them. And it kind of made me feel a little bit better about going by myself if I wanted to, because I was like, oh, I'm not doing it because I want to make friends or for myself, because it felt like I was putting too much pressure on that event. But I was like, oh, my grand might have something to look at. And it kind of pushed me to go to one or two of those events, which was quite helpful.
This sounds like a win-win relationship to me. You benefited, but I'm sure they really loved from you. I mean, and a good reminder of, for me, that of course there are resources within the university, but there's huge resources from outside the university.
Yeah.
Kind of keeping connected with kind of friends or, you know, really importantly, family when you go to new settings, because they will want to hear what you've been doing and what you've been doing.
Yeah.
That's lovely. That's really good. I guess we're getting into this kind of idea about then what are the things that helped you kind of stay at university, because you had, you know, it sounded like the learning bit was kind of fine mostly, and you stayed.
Yeah.
One of the things that helped you stayed was your grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
What else helped you to stay?
I think the pressure. The pressure of needing a degree, I think I sort of realized, for the expectations my parents have of me and my sister, that a degree was necessary. And I was at a good university. I had a good opportunity that I needed to complete it.
And you've got a job where you needed a degree.
Yeah, I have. The job requires the degree, as did pretty much every possible job that I considered whilst I was still at university. And then afterwards, I wouldn't have gotten very far in what I wanted to do if I didn't have the university degree. It's obviously not always the case. There are, if you're unhappy and you don't need that qualification, then I would say it's probably not worth the detriment to your mental health or your well-being. But
you had clear vision about what you were working towards.
Yeah.
This piece of paper and how it might then open other doors for you of the things that you wanted to do.
Yeah. I think I definitely had to put less pressure on myself in the final year in order, because I knew that I wanted that degree. And I thought the only way I will get through it is if I just sort of relax.
Yeah.
Because I had up until that point been very rigid. And whilst I was enjoying it, I almost felt like it was becoming too much.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because then the anxiety, the OCD, it turned into sort of severe depression. And then I was like, I can't keep up with my grades as well as I did before. And then that sort of fed into the anxiety and the sort of, it was sort of like a vicious cycle. And I had to say, if I want to finish this degree, I'm going to have to be happier with less than, say, like a first class honors. And I think once I made peace with that and I sort of changed my routine to look more fun, and I was like, I can still, if I'm still by myself and not always doing all these problem sheets or all this, then I don't know, some of that pressure might alleviate and then I can finish the degree.
I think those kind of bits of it, we're kind of working on to what advice would you give to, mm-hmm. to kind of other students in your situation, you know, going to university with a diagnosis. I mean, being open and honest about it and linking into resources is one.
Yeah.
Looking at the resources beyond university, the things mm-hmm. that have helped you in the past, like that role that your grandparents played in it.
Yeah.
Knowing why you're at university. Mm-hmm. I'm here to get a piece of paper. It's the purpose. It's going to open doors for me later.
Yeah.
And also there's something there about kind of knowing yourself and about understanding the pressure that you put yourself under and the cost mm-hmm. of that pressure. So
yeah,
the fact that you were able to ease off a little bit, and yeah, was a good thing.
Yeah.
I like those bits of advice very much. I don't like it was it was hard for you.
Yeah.
But you wanted to get through it and get mm-hmm. through it in a bit more fun way in that last year. Make it fun for yourself. How did you make it fun for yourself?
I joined a nice gym, which I probably couldn't afford at the time, but I thought it was worth my happiness because it had a lovely sauna. And I would, after class, I would just sit and I would decompress. I also they had student discounts to the cinema and to the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would go there on most Saturdays because if you went enough times, you paid off the original price that you went into it. I wasn't going clubbing or anything else. So my mum always said, like, you can afford to get a zoo membership if you're not going out every night and spending money on drinks.
Yeah.
So I was like, you're right. I should probably, because I think up until that third year of university, I really didn't spend like any money. I don't know why. I didn't do anything other than eat and do my schoolwork. And so, like, I was getting the student loans and the maintenance loans, but since I wasn't really doing anything, I'd sort of, by the third year, I was very sad a lot of the times, very stressed. And then I'd amassed sort of extra money rather than going into more sort of debt. And my mum was like, I think you just need to enjoy this. And if you have it, like, go to the zoo if you want to on a Saturday. Like, what's stopping you? Like, you can do the problem sheet after when you get back.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
A nice bit of self-care there.
Yeah.
Doing the things that are going to decompress you, like you said, kind of bring you some joy and fun.
Yeah.
I like that. I don't hear many students are going to the zoo. I think that's good.
I also love aquariums.
Right.
Extremely relaxing. Anything with sort of fish moving, I don't know. I sometimes just put it on in the background on my screen when I have a lot of work to do and I know that I have to just sit and do it. I just put fish on in the background.
I mean, find what kind of makes it more bearable.
Yeah, 100%. I think that I've taken that on in all aspects of my life.
Yeah. So these kind of things that you learned about that this time at university, mm-hmm. you said there you've taken it on beyond that transition, because I know you're now in work.
Yeah.
I know you've got quite a busy kind of focused, stressful yeah. work at times. You know, and we've talked a little bit about that transition to university. There's also another big transition when you leave, but also the transition to work. Do you think learning a bit about it sounds to me like, Anya, that you learned a lot about yourself in that transition. Mm-hmm. Have you taken some things in this next transition into work? Do you think you've imported some of those things into that?
Yeah, I think I definitely have. I think one thing that I sort of, just to go back on sort of what strengths helped me at university as yeah. well, and it helped me cope a lot of the time, especially with that sort of transition, is sort of the honesty mm-hmm. that is often linked to an autism diagnosis, sort of our more blunt nature of discussing mm-hmm. things. And I think I'm a lot more likely, when people ask me, like, how are you, to give the truth rather than other people. And I think that actually is helpful, mm-hmm. because not only do you get to actually like vent about how you feel and yeah. things get done, but you find that a lot of the time other people feel the same. They just would respond, oh, I'm fine in that situation. And it has helped, especially at my work now, sort of create sort of workplace friendships.
Yeah.
Because we've all been stressed with deadlines, things coming up. And I will be the one to say, this is too much for me right now. Mm-hmm. And then someone else will say, same. Shall we go and walk around the playground or the park or whatever? And then we all get to sort of take a deep breath and then go back. Or someone will say, I'm also stressed. This is what I'm doing. And it sort of helps you manage that. Sometimes it's just the camaraderie that comes with everyone sinking in their boats that sort of makes you feel a little bit better about not being able to cope yourself.
And maybe less isolated.
100%. Yeah. I think what working has taught me is that I always felt when I went to university that outside of a school setting, it was impossible to make friends. And so I put a lot of my pressure on myself as well during university, because I thought, this is your last chance to make friends. And if you haven't made them yet, then that's you until the end of my days. I was like, well, I'm just not going to have anyone in my life. But actually, I have found people sort of at work or through friends at work that are then outside of work, but I still see. It's just my friendship story just doesn't look like the classic ones that you see on TV or in media. It's just, yeah.
Yeah.
I got my friendships at 25 onwards rather than before. So.
And I think that, you know, when Louise and I have been talking to a lot of young people who are going off to university, it's often their biggest worry. Mm-hmm. It's about making friendships and comparing themselves with other people. And they see all these other people in relationships and making these great groups. And of course, as our nature of comparing, we kind of think, oh, they're doing that and I'm not. And in a relationship episode on the podcast, we took some research from Cambridge by this guy, Robin Dunbar. And he was saying that if you're going to make deep friendships, not these superficial ones, it takes at least 6 months. And it yeah. takes at least 6 months of intensive, it's not just sitting next to somebody in a university lecture, but it's, you know, 3 hours of intensive kind of going and eating dinner, going and doing things together, you know, in a quite focused, so it takes time and effort. And for some people, that's a lot more difficult to do. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like at Edwards University, they were kind of really working on that and knowing to do that. And let's hope maybe people are doing it a lot more now.
Yeah.
Help those sort of systems in. Mm-hmm. And it's never too late to make friends, is it?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So glad you've got your, and you know, it just needs a few sometimes. It needs a few good people that you can link
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else that you would kind of say to people going off to university in particular about what's important?
I would definitely say ask for help. I don't know. Some people have an issue asking for help. I feel like maybe since I got diagnosed so early compared to other people that I know, I've sort of just been asking for help since I was at school. So it feels very second nature to just always. So I didn't have a problem when I went to my new job to go to HR and be like, this is the diagnosis. This is sort of what comes with it, and sort of having regular meetings there just to make sure the accommodations are in place. I know that can be difficult if maybe you're not used to doing that or not getting accommodations, but I would say ask for help. It's the easiest way to sort of stop feeling how you're feeling if you're stressed or if you're overwhelmed with things. Also, I guess it's always really cliche, and I am not one for this, but it is helpful to stay positive. I think during university, it was a negative sort of frame of mind that I was going for. But if I just sort of waited until now, where I kind of wanted to be, I do see I didn't need to be that negative because a good outcome was going to happen eventually. You know, like you just don't know what's going to happen. So you sort of, yeah, I have a close friend that I really enjoy spending time with. I have work colleagues. And I just feel like had I thought that, like, I don't need to worry about this right now, university time will do its thing and it will happen, then I think I could have been I wouldn't have been under so much pressure. And I think that would have helped my mental state as well. Yeah. And just think like you said, most people would have wanted the routines that I was creating for myself. Yeah. Sort of just remember that there are great things about it, even if there's also some darker moments to having an autism diagnosis.
And the fact that you knew also, Anya, that you had to take some pressure off yourself is pretty insightful, isn't it? You know, you could just have been kind of continuing, you know, doing what you were doing, but you thought, actually, if I'm going to get through this and I'm going to get to what I want to have this degree to be able to go on to do other things that I want to, is that I have to ease that on myself.
Yeah.
You found very creative.
Yeah. I think that having the diagnosis so early and having all that sort of support through the talking therapies and CBT sort of during the adolescent years, it helped me become very self-aware, because I feel like I'm always thinking about what I'm feeling, or sort of less what I'm feeling, but how I'm presenting myself.
Yeah.
Because I am very consistent and I love a routine, and I get to a point where I hate my routine. And I'm always like, that's new. What is that? And it's always the same thing. It's always just that I have too much going on and I have to adjust it slightly for the pressure to sort of lift. And yeah. I think having done enough transitions, because I went back to university after as well, before I started work, because I've done it so many times now, I sort of just know that pattern in myself. And I know the feeling, even if I can't really describe exactly what it feels like physically, but suddenly I'm like, this is all wrong. I never want to do this again. And I know I just have to sort of shift some things.
I mean, I think we have as humans, we have this inbuilt thing in us that we like routine and structure, but we also like novelty too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's how you kind of balance that. And maybe as well, you know, I like this idea of, I often talk about signals, but when you see your routine and structures too much for you, you go, oh, that's the signal that when I'm not liking this, the thing that I normally like, it's because I'm pressured.
Yeah.
So it is about this self-understanding and being able to kind of be aware of yourself. And that comes in your 20s, you know,
yeah.
I don't think it comes before that.
No.
I think it comes in your 20s for, you know, to understand those things.
Yeah.
And Anya, this has been really kind of fascinating. And I think on a number of levels, one on your personal level, on the personal level about your journey, you know, going through a really difficult time at university and getting out the other side of it, hearing how you kind of helped yourself. And listening to you talk about the things that you kind of used and pulled and those resources beyond university, of course, the ones in university help, but beyond those ones, and asking for help and being honest about things and, you know, using your strengths, but also being aware of sometimes when your strengths become a challenge.
Yeah.
I know the listeners don't know this, but I know that you're really successful in your job and you're enjoying your job, aren't you, for the most part?
Yeah.
And so there is a positive story in it there. And I do think it's one of those things that for most of us, we think that our life goes in a progression upwards. Reality is it oscillates, it goes ups and downs.
Yeah.
And you've talked very nicely about the ups and downs today and how you've kind of used them to get through and get to what you want to do. Thank you for your time and your wisdom and your sharing your story with us, Anya.
Thank you so much, Anya, for sharing your journey and insights into university transition so openly. I'm certain that this will be a really helpful episode for students listening who are neurodiverse and about to embark on their own university journey. And this episode and this conversation has really set me thinking about the social connection aspect of the uni experience. And I think for universities, your experience and your suggestions are really helpful. I think your reference to mentors and buddies is a really good idea for supporting people who may find the social connection aspect challenging. And I think it's really worth giving the episode 71 with Edward Mills a listen, because he talks about the support his university provides in helping students with some form of neurodiversity to connect. And listening to that will perhaps give you some ideas for questions you can ask if you're a student about to attend university, some questions you can ask your university about the kind of support they may provide, and also for universities, some suggestions about additional services and support you might provide. Anya touched on the challenge of asking for help, something that she doesn't find particularly challenging, but we have recognised through conversations with students that can be a bit of a challenge for all students. And we have a specific episode that's all about asking for help. So if you're interested in listening to that, go to episode 6. So thanks for listening today. We're going to be back next week when we will be talking to Steve Sector from MuchSmarter.com about being exam smart. There's some great stories and great tips and content in that episode. So we'll meet you there this time next week. Meanwhile, have a great weekend and a great week. Bye-bye for now. And now for the legal bits. The information contained in this podcast is for information purposes only. The content is not intended to act as a substitute for professional advice. Please do not delay in seeking professional help for any medical or mental health condition. Use of the information in this podcast and associated materials is at the user's own risk.